Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, October 20th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We're on page 92, the second paragraph that begins with continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, and we'll be reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Linda B., who'll be reading the 12 steps, Karen W. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Penny L. C., Mary B., and Patricia C. The share ID for Tuesday, October 19th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 17,944. That's 17,944. This morning's Wednesday, October 20th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the share ID is 17,952. That's 17,952. Our newcomer greeter for today is Kaylee R., and Leslie M. will be making the announcements. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting to our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Linda B. to read the 12 steps, please. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Linda B. I'm a compulsive overeater from Ontario, Canada. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we are powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for this opportunity to be of service, and I will pass.
Thank you, Linda B. And Karen W., good morning. Would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Good morning. This is Karen W., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York, and here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group or never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for the chance to do service, and thank you all for your service. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Karen W. Our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 92, the second paragraph that begins with continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness. We'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. So good morning, Penny LC. If you could get us started, please.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny LC, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is an alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. And here we are in chapter of working with others, learning how to carry the message and being given more clear directions for passing on what was passed to me. And while I'm able to share my experience of how I felt and thought and acted in my disease, quite hopeless. And in coming to the program, somewhat skeptical but desperate, and hearing the problem clearly outlined and the solution explained. So I was curious, but I was fearful of whether it would work for me. But the person that shared with me, they showed me that they were like me. They told me what their life was like before recovery, in their process of recovering and becoming recovered. And they listened to me. They let me share. So that show, that tell, that listen allowed me to feel connected. And, you know, my job then is to dwell on the hopelessness, but then share the hope of a spiritual solution. And to let them know, for me, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Stressing the key requirement, a willingness to go to any length. And essentially sharing the ABCs of being willing to admit that I couldn't believe that a higher power could, and choose to turn my will and my life over to a higher power. So all I'm doing is being able to relate to the protege and hopefully be a good listener that they can share and feel that they can relate to me. And with that connection, there's the beginning of a spiritual connection. And being sure that I know I would have invited higher power to be there with us. So it was this, you know, it would be the three of us having this conversation and feeling guided and trusting that God will put the words in my mouth that the other person needs to hear, and then leave the results up to God. Thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Penny LT, for getting us started. And again, we're on page 92, the second paragraph, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness. And although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared Monday or Tuesday and you'd like to share this morning, I'm ready for your name.
Michelle J.
Michelle J.
Irene B.
Irene B.
Lisa M.
Lisa M.
Christy M.
Christy M.
Veronica B.
Veronica B. Okay, Dawn B.
Stop there.
Was that Ellen B.? Dawn B. Oh, Dawn B. Sorry, I was way off, Dawn. Sorry.
Julie.
Okay, let's stop there. Okay, and I'll put you in there too, Julie. Okay, I have Michelle S., Irene B., Lisa M., Christy M., Veronica B., Dawn B., and Julie R. And if you're not Michelle S., if you could press star 1 to mute, please. Go ahead, please, Michelle.
Good morning. I am Michelle J., calling in from Arkansas. Long
Jay,
time
sorry.
No talk to you all. That's okay. No problem.
I can't read my own writing, Michelle.
Me either. So any Hoosiers, so here I am this morning, recovering every day and learning how to get recovered and stay recovered. This is such a cool paragraph for me this morning. And thinking about the way when I first read this paragraph, you know, as an illness, alcoholism, but for me it's food. I am a food addict, a foodaholic, a food, it's my illness. So what I've been learning in the 3 years in Vision and OA and in a few other programs now is the powerlessness. My illness is powerlessness. And as I'm reading this and we're talking about working with others, I am powerless over my food today, and I will be my whole life. I am powerless over waking up someone to a spiritual understanding. I am powerless to fix my problems in life. I am resigned and resolved and learning how to press into that with everything I have. See, I can't even get someone who I'm talking to to understand things, I am powerless. So what do I have? I can tell what I'm going through, what I'm doing, what success I've had, what failures I've had. And then there is a power greater than myself that I truly believe in. And that power is who does the awakening. That power is who does the work in someone else. I don't have to. And it is so freeing to just be me, be a mess, have my failures, have my victories, and to share, all knowing that I'm not in control. I am powerless. I'm still powerless over it all. That has been a key element in my recovery today. And to teach others just to get up and be powerless, and it's okay. No shame, no guilt, and just let the power greater than ourselves, the creator of the universe, whatever he is or she is to anybody, be the one. I can tell everyone about my stuff, but they may not even hear it. I could speak on my head and upside down and do cartwheels. But God, the creator of the universe, he can break through places I can't. And it's just a pleasure to be able to work with people and be vulnerable and allow them to be vulnerable. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Michelle J. And Irene B., you're up, followed by Lisa M. Go ahead, Irene.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. I'm Irene B., a gratefully recovered bulimic from Louisiana. I apologize for the noise, but I'm in the car. I have to share on this paragraph because I've never shared what it was like to be bulimic, to be what my life was like. I could not be abstinent for 1 hour period. A day? Are you kidding me? No. I was able to be abstinent when my husband was home, but the moment he left the house to travel because he traveled out of town, I would go back in the food. If he was home, I was okay. But that's for the last 18 years. Well, whatever. Prior to that, prior to being married, any unstructured time, I had to spend binging and purging. 1 hour without binging and purging was unimaginable. I was so into my disease that I was suicidal because there was no way out. And I didn't come into OA because of the looks. I didn't come in because of the weight. I came into OA because I desperately needed to stop binging and purging because my life had become nothing other than the focus on the binge and purge. My waking hours were just so that I could function in the world, but the moment I had to stop functioning in the world, which meant a job, it was to the grocery store and then to the house and hiding out. And on weekends until 2-3 o'clock in the morning until I couldn't take it anymore. And then I would wake, and then I would fall asleep from exhaustion, from binging and purging, and then I'd wake up to do it again. And then I was jittery, and I knew that I needed vitamin C, and I knew I needed potassium. It's a miracle of God that I didn't die because of this disease. Sometimes there was blood coming back, you know, from my esophagus, I suspect. It's a miracle it never ruptured. It really and truly is. And so I just want to say that I did not know what the solution was. All I knew is that the treatment programs didn't work because they told me that I could eat everything in moderation, and that's why I could never recover, because that triggered the allergy of the body, and that couldn't be. That just couldn't be. So I'm so grateful to know that it's all about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, because without that knowledge, I would still be bulimic. And I thank God for this program, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Irene B. and Lisa M. Good morning. You're up, followed by Christy M.
Hi, I'm Lisa M., a recovered compulsive eater in San Diego, and I really enjoyed this paragraph. What stuck out to me at the beginning was this illness again, that we have an illness and that it's fatal. And they don't mince words about the disease in here. And then it talks about the conditions of body and mind. So that's my physical allergy and the mental twist, that twofold part of my disease. And I forget that there are people who don't know, newcomers sometimes, who don't know that it is a disease, that that's new information for why they're doing what they're doing. It also reminds me of Rowan Hazard in the book where Jung is telling him that he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, and it feels like the gates of hell are clanging shut, and this hopelessness. But it reminds me that I can emphasize all this, the fatal nature of it and all about the disease, because I offer a solution. I have directions in a book that will help this hopeless compulsive eater recover. And then there's all these italics about what I should do, emphasizing that I tell exactly what happened to me. I'm allowed to stress the spiritual feature, and I don't have to be worried about their beliefs necessarily, because all they have to do is be willing. I love that last line, that, and it tells us this many places in the book, that the only thing we have to do regarding our power greater than ourselves is to be willing to believe. And that meant a lot to me when I came into the program in 1985. I did not have a concept of a power greater than myself, and I didn't like really hearing about it from other people. It was one of the things that turned me off. And thank goodness I was able to make a small start with willingness to believe in a power greater than myself, because it's been a roadmap for life, for my whole, for everything, for parenting, for working, for family relationships, everything. It's been the guiding force of my life. And all it took was that little bit of willingness. That book tells us that's all we need. And with that, I pass. I'm an available sponsor in San Diego. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa M. in California. And Christy M., you're up, followed by Veronica B. Go ahead, Christy.
Good morning. This is Christy M., recovering bulimic in Oregon. And this paragraph really makes me think of a lot of things. I think the first is just that our higher power has given us this precious gift of abstinence and serenity. And that gift is to be used to help others find freedom from their disease. And just remembering that importance of service and what to do with this gift that I've been given by my higher power. And the other piece that really came up for me was just that it's a program of attraction, not promotion. That when the paragraph talks about how they talk to the newcomer, they're not like, well, you have to go to this many meetings a week and you have to do this and you can't do this. It really, the way you talk to a newcomer is to share your story, because it is about attraction, not promotion. It's not about, they don't talk about the program. They don't talk about the rules. They don't talk about the way. They talk about like their story. They share their story of hope, and they share how it used to be and how it is now. And I think when I'm in my disease, I can be in such a place of like controlling others and thinking I know what's best for them, and thinking that I know what's best for me rather than my higher power. And I have, you know, I have a mother who's active in the disease, and it's tempting to say all the things that I think that she should be doing, like, oh, you really shouldn't eat that, or you should really try to go to OA. But really the best way to help others is to just work my own program. And really, I was thinking that the change, like, yes, the outcome oftentimes is our weight being more manageable, that could be an effect, but really the start of the change happens spiritually and emotionally. And that is what should be seen by others, is like the change in how we are. And one of those ways is not trying to control other people's programs. I thought when I came in and I would hear speakers that the way I was going to find abstinence is I was going to hear somebody who was abstinent and I was just going to do exactly what they did. But I'm not them. And I don't have, their disease isn't just like mine. I'm a different person. And I kept trying to try on other people's recovery instead of trying to figure out my own. And I realized that, you know, our higher power, our recovery is in our higher power's time and our higher power's ways. And I think that's why there's a lot of different ways of doing OA, even within the OA program, because everybody's different. And I had to let go of like falling in the mold of someone else to find recovery and abstinence. I had to find my own program. I had to let my higher power show me the way to abstinence that was going to work for me, for my body, for my soul. And when I let go, I'll wrap up, and stop trying to control is when I started to find abstinence. So thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Christy M. in Oregon. And Veronica B., good morning. You're up, followed by Dawn B.
Hi, good morning. My name is Veronica. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And thank you, Kathleen, for your service. I like where it says, tell him exactly what happened to you. When I was new to Overeaters Anonymous, I was attracted to people who spoke of being very happy in their own skin, and they had neutrality around the food. You can tell that they had changed. I mean, I didn't see when they were, you know, the weight loss, but you can hear it in their tone of voice. They were just happy. There was a lightness about them. And I was attracted to that. You know, all my life, from a young age, I was a compulsive eater. My mom told me that I always had to have three pacifiers in my hand. I had one in each hand and then one in my mouth always. And when I was a kid, there was like five kids in the house. And I would be the only child to ask for more food. And because they would give us all the same amount of food. And I was the only child to ask for more food. So I think I was born a compulsive eater. I don't really care to know why I'm a compulsive eater. But, you know, where it says that it's an illness. For me, it's an illness because I know for me now, through working the steps, and living this way of life, like I have an allergy to certain food ingredients, and I'm in acceptance about that. In my heart, I accept that I am allergic to certain food ingredients, and more importantly, I have a mind that suffers from, like, I have a lot of obsessive thinking, and I didn't know this about my illness when I came into Overeaters Anonymous, and so the best thing to happen for me was, and I know all about hopelessness because I came in hopeless. So that's my best gift that I can share with another compulsive eater, is share with them how hopeless I was, how broken I came into Overeaters Anonymous, and how today my life has been transformed. I'm a completely different person today. You know, food used to be my default, and today God is my default. Today I see it as my glass is half full, not half empty. Today I think about how can I be useful to others? How can I help others? What can I bring to this situation? What can I be like a shining bright light? I want to be a shining bright light in people's lives, you know, at work, with my family. And I am a shining bright light because I have God in my heart today. I have program in my heart today. I have a way of living today that makes me feel comfortable in my own skin. I have neutrality around the food, and that is a miracle for me. That's a gift. I don't take it for granted for a second. And I'm just overpaid in this, just overpaid by just working working the steps. Living the steps, you know, has absolutely transformed me. And that's the best gift I can share with another compulsive eater. is how I went from hopeless to today, hopeful and excited to see what's to come. So thank you for letting me share, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you, Veronica B. in California. And Dawn B., good morning. You're up, followed by Julie R.
Good morning. Thank you. It's lovely to be here. My name is Dawn B., and I'm recovered from Southern California. I love the words that jumped out at me in this paragraph are fatal. Our illness is fatal. We are doomed, and hopelessness. Those words really jumped out at me, and those were the powerful words, the message of the doctor's opinion. I have to accept and embrace to the core of my being that this illness that I have is fatal, that there's nothing ahead for me but a lot more pain, a lot more suffering, and an early death if I continue down the road that I was going, if I continue to be lost in my addiction. That is absolutely fatal. There's so much more pain, so much more suffering. That's all I have to look forward to if I continue. So the power of this message is that when I embrace that, me personally, it took me almost 35 years in program before I was able to get more than 3 days here, 7 days there, 21 days once or twice in almost 35 years in the rooms. And finally, 9 years ago, I was able to embrace that this, I am doomed. This is hopeless. I am lost in my addiction. And there's nothing ahead for me but much more pain, much more suffering, untold suffering if I continue down this road. Unless I clearly identify my alcoholic foods and put them down 100%. And grab hold of this program with all the enthusiasm that a drowning person grabs hold of a life preserver and work this program like my life depends on it, because it absolutely does. And that's what I did, thanks be to God, 9 years ago. And I'm down over 120 pounds from my top weight. I feel 20 years younger. My brain works better. But I am living a life beyond my wildest dreams. I'm a mother. I have 4 children. 3 of them have autism. 2 also have the higher functioning ones, who also have mental illness. My husband is a cancer survivor with ongoing health challenges, but I am living a life beyond my wildest dreams because I am working the steps. And because of that, my life has been transformed. Not that my circumstances have changed, but my attitude about those circumstances has been absolutely transformed. And life is beautiful. It absolutely is. As I live each day in a life of surrender, asking first and foremost, how can I best serve thee, God? Thy will be done, not mine. May I surrender today, and my only goal is God's will.
Okay, please.
And when I surrender to that, it is a beautiful, beautiful life. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Dawn B. And Julie, before I take you, just a reminder to everyone, we're on page 92, the second paragraph, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness. And I'll be taking some more names after Dawn, or sorry, after Julie. So go ahead, please, Julie.
I think it was Kaylee R. But if Julie's here.
Oh, it was Kaylee R? Okay,
I think
Kaylee,
so.
I'm sorry.
No,
go
no,
ahead.
No problem.
Oh,
hi,
go ahead.
I'm
thank you.
I'm Kaylee R. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. I really like this paragraph. And the first thing it talks about is that fatal malady. And our disease kills more than alcoholism and all other addictions combined. This is a serious thing. And it's so, I can't think of the right word for it, but kind of okay in our society. Food is okay, even if we're overweight. But to continue on through the paragraph, talking about our personal experience, nobody wants to be lectured at, especially if they don't believe that they have this disease on their own. Nobody wants to be lectured at. We all get defensive. This is a But we're all very insecure about our bodies, especially before we come into this program. And so we don't want to be lectured at that we're either overweight or underweight or we have a problem with food. We want everybody to think that nobody can see what's going on with us. So just telling our own story and letting them relate into us. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the part about letting him tell him what happened to him and just listening and not trying to give him a solution right away, but just listening to what he has to say and let them feel like they can share openly without being lectured. And then also about not having to agree with our conception of God. When I came into this program, I was very atheist, agnostic, I'm not sure, but I just did not believe in anything. And being given the option and the power to choose, you know, my own conception, I started off with just the universe. And that worked for me, and then it grew into something more. But really, again, it says all we have to do is be willing to believe. Right? I was willing to believe in the universe, and I slowly began to believe in it. Higher power of my own understanding in living by your spiritual principles. This is what, you know, that's how we remain abstinent, is living by your spiritual principles. That's how we're able to be of service to others, and to others in this program and to our families and friends and anybody we encounter. And so just being willing to believe in that allows us, I believe, to be better humans, to be better towards other people, to be better towards ourselves. And I'm just really grateful for this program, grateful to be able to share with you this morning, and I hope everybody has a wonderful day. Thanks for letting me share. Bye.
Thank you, Kaylee R. in California. Okay, if you haven't shared Monday or Tuesday and you'd like to share on the second paragraph on page 92, I am ready for some names.
Rachel P.
Rachel P. And take a couple more names.
Georgie.
Janice K.
And Janice K. Okay, let's stop there for now. So go ahead, please, Rachel P.
Good morning. This is Rachel P., recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. Yeah, this is a really powerful paragraph that teaches me how to approach someone. You know, in this first part about speaking of alcoholism as an illness, you know, we talk about how this is a disease. It's not our fault. It's not my fault. And if it's something that's been really powerful for me to understand is, if it's my fault, it's my problem to fix. If it's not my fault, it's God's problem to fix. Or, you know, if the God word doesn't jive like it didn't for me initially, you know, maybe rephrase that to, I can accept help in fixing this in a solution. You know, it also talks about keeping the attention on my personal experience. So it's really important to use I language, you know, to share my personal experience and not to use you language. I don't want to diagnose or make assumptions about this person because that may alienate the person, and they may not feel understood if I'm telling them about themselves. You know, this is someone maybe I just met. I don't know. I don't necessarily know their experience. I only have my own solution to share. You know, and especially with this piece about it being an illness, a disease, you know, I think a lot of us, a lot of just in our general consciousness of society on a global scale, with food, this is not understood by most people, you know. A lot of the time we think with food, it's a matter of willpower. I mean, I know I believed that until I came into this program. But, you know, this paragraph does talk about the conditions of the body and mind which accompany this disease. I know when I first understood, when it was explained to me, you know, how the doctor, in the doctor's opinion, that this is an allergy of the body, and it's a mental twist component. It's a twofold illness that, you know, I can't, once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop from starting because, you know, my brain tells me that this is, that food is the solution. Once I understood that, it was like a light bulb moment, and I felt this incredible sense of belonging. Like, this is the place that I need to be. And a sense of loneliness, like, fell from my world, knowing that I was in the right place. And so to talk about the nature of the disease, one, that it is a disease, and two, you know, that this is how the disease works, like, really, really helps, I think, people understand that there is a solution, you know, and emphasizing, like, this problem is deadly, you know, like this paragraph talks about. I think, again, with food, we don't necessarily understand the depths, like the progressiveness of this disease and the depths that it can take us to, and how it does kill us. You know, and I can talk about when I'm approaching a new person, like, I was hopeless. Like, this was the last, thank you. This was the last door on the block for me. And this is the only solution, and I found it, and it's a spiritual solution. And I'm so grateful for it. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel P. in Colorado. And Georgie, good morning. You're up, followed by Janice K.
This is Georgie. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Well, thank you for letting me share. Thank you for having this meeting. Thank you for everybody who does service at this meeting. What can I say about this paragraph? I mean, I like it, and I understand it. You know, I like to believe I'm feeding my soul today rather than my body. But if you say that to somebody who's brand new, you know, and let's face it, probably 1 out of 10 people in the program has some kind of problem with God. You know, they're just going to turn away. And I suppose that's why I like in-person meetings, because you can actually see when they're turning away. You can, I mean, visually, you can feel it. I mean, they say 90% of communication is nonverbal, non-visual. And I believe that, you know, I believe what the scientists tell me. I'm in the vicinity of an airport, so I hope it's a small airport. So I probably should pass, but let me just say one more thing. Last night, somebody brought a newcomer into the room, a physical room, because they were trying to help. And, you know, I hadn't seen that person like in half a week, and we didn't have an altercation, but there was something that happened. And I thought I was making a compliment, but I said, "Oh, you did your hair." And she looked away, which probably tells me that there was something there, in the sense that, you know, some kind of shame, some kind of guilt, I don't know. But it's not up to me to figure it out. I think that was already shared. We invite God into the room, and God fixes the problems. I mean, that's just my opinion, but it seems to work. I see miracles all the time in the program, and I hope I can continue that. Thank you for letting me share. Have a great day.
Thank you, George E. And Janice K., go ahead, please. And I probably can take one more name after Janice, so be ready if you want to share. Good morning, Janice.
Okay. Thank you. Did I get unmuted? Hello?
Yes, you did. We can hear you.
Okay,
we can hear you.
Thank you. Oh, my. George, thank you for the intro. Because what is really moving me is the fatal, progressive, and God solves problems. However you conceive of God to be. Oh, this is Janice K. in Oregon. This is my story about fatal and progressive, okay? In about March of 2019, I went to my doctor for my annual physical, and she set me up with an ultrasound. And when I came back for what was going on, she told me that I had non-alcoholic early stage fatty liver disease. Well, I had never heard of such a thing, so I got online and I did research. And I found out that not only did I have non-alcoholic early stage fatty liver disease, I also had high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and I was pre-diabetic. This puts me in line for something called metabolic syndrome, which vastly increases my chance of dying through cancer, heart attack, or stroke. So some things happened at that point, and I don't know which order. But I got a hold of a couple of cookbooks and wrote down a list of foods that were liver-friendly and liver-unfriendly. And I thought, okay, now I know what my food plan is. And, of course, the things that were positive for the liver were also good for, anyway, all of these things respond to management. They respond to diet and exercise. So I figured out the food plan. I figured out what I needed to do, which was eat differently and exercise. And I went to my higher power and I said something along the lines of, okay, God, if I am no longer of service to you, then I accept that. You know, thy will be done, not mine. But if I can be of service to you, help me to do these things. Get me out of the house and change what I eat, because I can't. So he did. And I went in for my last physical in April of 21. My liver values are normal, but high, but normal. My blood pressure is down by 10 to 15 points on both measures. I'm no longer pre-diabetic. All of my issues are controlled. And I did not do one day, one mouthful, or one bite. God has done for me what I could not do for myself. Thank you for listening. I pass.
And thank you so much, Janice K. in Oregon. Okay, I think we're out of time, so we'll go ahead and close our meeting this morning. Thank you, everyone who shared this morning. Really appreciate all your wonderful shares. So let's see, excuse me, we are going to, I can get my notes here. We're going to close the meeting this morning with a reading from the big book on page 164. And Mary B., if you would please read A Vision for You.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Mary B. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Phoenix, Arizona. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.